Hi everyone, my name's Rachel, and I'll be reading today's scripture from Exodus chapter 16, verses 1 to 3 and 11 to 32. The whole Israelite community set out from Elim and came to the desert of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month, after they had come out of Egypt. In the desert, the whole community grumbled against Moses and Aaron. The Israelites said to them, "If only we had died by the Lord's hand in Egypt. There we sat around pots of meat and ate all the food we wanted. But you have brought us out into this desert to starve this entire assembly to death." The Lord said to Moses, "I have heard the grumbling of the Israelites. Tell them, at twilight you will eat meat, and in the morning you will be filled with bread. Then you will know that I am the Lord your God." That evening quail came and covered the camp. And in the morning there was a layer of dew around the camp. When the dew was gone, thin flakes like frost on the ground appeared on the desert floor. When the Israelites saw it, they said to each other, "What is it?" For they did not know what it was. Moses said to them, "It is the bread the Lord has given you to eat. This is what the Lord has commanded. Everyone is to gather as much as they need. Take an omer for each person you have in your tent." The Israelites did as they were told. Some gathered much, some little. And when they measured it by the omer, the one who gathered much did not have too much, and the one who gathered little did not have too little. Everyone had gathered just as much as they needed. Then Moses said to them, "No one is to keep any of it until morning." However, some of them paid no attention to Moses. They kept part of it until morning, but it was full of maggots and began to smell, so Moses was angry with them. On the sixth day, they gathered twice as much, two omers for each person, and the leaders of the community came and reported this to Moses. He said to them, "This is what the Lord commanded. Tomorrow is to be a day of Sabbath rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. So bake what you want to bake, and boil what you want to boil. Save whatever is left and keep it until morning." So they saved it until morning as Moses commanded, and it did not stink or get maggots in it. "Eat it today," Moses said, "because today is a Sabbath to the Lord. You will not find any of it on the ground today. 6 days you are to gather it, but on the seventh day, the Sabbath, there will not be any." Nevertheless, some of the people went out on the seventh day to gather it, but they found none. Then the Lord said to Moses, "How long will you refuse to keep my commands and my instructions? Bear in mind that the Lord has given you the Sabbath. That is why on the sixth day he gives you bread for 2 days. Everyone is to stay where they are on the seventh day. No one is to go out." So the people rested on the seventh day. Everyone had gathered just as much as they needed. The people of Israel called the bread manna. It was white like coriander seed and tasted like wafers made with honey. Moses said, "This is what the Lord has commanded. Take an omer of manna and keep it for the generations to come, so that they can see the bread I gave you to eat in the wilderness when I brought you out of Egypt." This is the word of the Lord.
Yeah, so today, yes, we're continuing in our series, which we began last week, which was exploring formation in the wilderness, God's formation of the Hebrew people in their 40 years in the wilderness. And we're also seeking to ask what God may be speaking to us in this time that we find ourselves in, a bit of an in-between time. And regardless whether you really identify with this theme of wilderness or not, the teachings and the formation of God's people in the 40 days and in 40 years in the wilderness is something that is foundational and formational and has application for us all. So we want to be able to draw from these stories. And today's story is one of my favorites, especially this last year. It's been a story that has had quite a bit of significance for me. The manna story is actually something we consider a root story in scripture. It's one that contains key elements that branch out into several directions all the way through the Gospels and onto the book of Revelation. And I'm quite inspired by this story. I've wanted to preach on it for several months now. The problem is that there's way too much, even in the simple story, that I wanted to point out. As I've been wrestling with what I could say in such a short time on Zoom, I remembered this wonderful book that I have called Manna and Mercy. And this book brings out these themes so simply and beautifully. And it even has pictures throughout the book, as you can see. It actually goes through the whole of scripture. The subtitle is A Brief History of God's Unfolding Promise to Mend the Entire Universe. I actually would highly recommend it for any of you that would like to see some of the really beautiful themes that we find throughout scriptures of what God is doing in this world. So I decided to receive this book as kind of manna itself and to gather up the words from it and share them with you without trying to produce more and more of my own words on my own. So I'm going to be drawing a lot from this book today. And in fact, it's got such fun drawings. I'm actually going to switch over to a screen share. And there we go. Today we're going to explore together God's manna economy. And this particular telling of the story from this book that I shared with you starts, and it speaks about this time of the Hebrew people in the wilderness, calling it a wilderness school. So the author begins like this. God wanted to form the people into God's ways and God's to be a sign of God's presence in this world. But when would the wilderness instruction begin? God, the teacher, waited and waited for the teachable moment, a moment which came when the people grumbled about food. At least in Egypt, we had food. Here, there is nothing. Yahweh responded by showering them with some edible substance called, what is it? Or manna. Manna actually comes from this phrase, what is it? So that's basically what it means, what is it? The way that God gave manna and the way that the people gathered it and shared it taught the people how to live as a special people on earth. So this manna itself became the first lesson that God was teaching God's people in the wilderness. So there's the first lesson. God, number one, God gives manna for all. There's a lot of key points in the way this story unfolds that becomes a lesson for us. God provided manna each day. The people gathered the manna for their household. And amazingly, those who gathered a lot and those who gathered a little all had enough. No one had too much. So through this, what the partner people learned is that all food is God's. In fact, everything is God's. We own nothing. We can trust God for daily bread. Work is dignified activity of helping God meet the needs of all people. There was work involved. People went out and they gathered the food and they made sure everyone in their household was fed. And then with this amazing picture of there not being too much or too little, no matter how much they gathered, it's this lesson of God giving daily food. Hoarding is not necessary. There's food for all, not just the big deals or the deservings. God gives enough. All can therefore live in sufficiency with neither too much nor too little. This is giving a vision of what God desires for the world. And if you think about it in the context of this story, of Exodus, we realize how different this picture is. This is a picture of an economy here, is from what they have come from. If we look back, we see what it was actually like under Pharaoh's economy. Now, this cute little picture here from the same book tells you what things were like back in Pharaoh's land. Pharaoh was seen as kind of a godlike figure, the one that gave the food. So you see the contrast here in the wilderness where Yahweh is the one who gives the food. The Pharaoh had this food to give because Pharaoh stored all the food, gathered all of the food together, hoarded it, you could say, and distributed it as Pharaoh desired. But this whole system was dependent on, you can see the work and the production of the slaves at the bottom. And the priesthood and the military all kind of supported and held up this economy. But this economy, unlike the one that we're gonna that we see here unfolding in the wilderness, was one where there is a fear of scarcity. There's always, the Pharaoh almost kind of goes about the work with this anxiety to produce more. There's not enough, there's gotta be more. The work is never ceasing. Deuteronomy speaks of this Egypt as an iron furnace. There's this, it's this picture of always more and more being put into the fire and burned up. There's a drive to produce more with less. And if you remember, as Pharaoh became more and more angry with the slaves, at one point he said, they need to make more bricks, but don't give them straw. They need to go out to the fields and they have to gather their own straw, which was impossible because they were supposed to still produce the same amount of bricks. This imagery is very similar here to what you see in the wilderness. God sent the people out into the fields, the wilderness, to gather. They were gathering bread. In Pharaoh's world, they were sent out to gather straw. In Pharaoh's world, they could never gather enough to produce all that they were supposed to. Whereas in God's wilderness abundance, there was always enough for everyone. And it wasn't an accumulation for some over against others. Whereas in Pharaoh's world, there was endless accumulation, but it led more and more to power, to the power of the big deals, the Pharaoh, the royal families at the top. And of course, this was not equally distributed. So you see that these lessons that the people were learning were quite significant new ways of being formed. And yet we hear in this story that some people were still deeply seeped in this Pharaoh way. And, you know, frankly, I kind of have sympathy for them being in the wilderness. I would have a hard time trusting that food was coming the next day as well. And so some people hoarded. And what did they find when they hoarded the manna and kept it overnight, as they were not supposed to do? It got smelly and it grew maggots. And this brings us to the second lesson, which is hoarding stinks. They learned that Pharaoh's Egypt way, which was of accumulating, of piling up, brings rot, decay, and death. You know, and if we're honest, I think we have to admit that many of the Pharaoh's economy is still what drives a lot of our world and a lot of our economies today. And we're finding this same thing, the fruit of this way of accumulating and piling up, of consuming more and more, is bringing rot and decay and death in our world, on the creation. And this is contrary to the way that God has designed the world to be. And this is what we are seeing in this story. And there's one more lesson that comes from this first experience of manna in the wilderness. Yahweh, the creator and the liberator, had one more great lesson to share. And that was the meaning of Sabbath. Yahweh wanted the partner people to receive this beautiful gift of rest and refreshment, this gift of time to enjoy fully what life is about, friendship with God and others and nature. So a little bit later, they're going to be given the law, and there will be more instruction on the Sabbath. But before they're even given those instruction, they're given a taste of it, literally, of what Sabbath is like. This is the one day of the week that they were allowed to gather more. And this would last them the next day into the Sabbath. And in the Sabbath, they were meant to stop from their gathering and rest. This became a lesson for them that humans do not have to work every day to receive and distribute God's manna. The extra time is a beautiful gift of God, which makes it possible for humans, animals, and the earth to rest. Sabbath allows humans to experience full time the wonder of friendship with God and others and creation. I think this is lovely the way that this author puts it, this friendship with God, others, and all creation as a vision of God's shalom. There's just one problem with this lesson here. And if you've been at Grandview for a while, you've probably heard this said before. And that is, what does Sabbath mean if the other lessons from the manna economy are not being lived? For example, if we go back to Pharaoh's world here, it's nice to say to the royal family, you get a Sabbath, but what do we do if their Sabbath is dependent on the slaves working even harder to feed the royal family while they're taking a break? It doesn't work. This Sabbath that we see being instructed here really depends on these other lessons of work that is working to meet the needs of all people, of not gathering more than we need so that others can have enough. It's dependent on this finding ways out of this trap of hoarding. But with that comes the gift of Sabbath. These are just a few of the beautiful lessons. I'm going to take you back now from this passage. And it turns out that this was one of the themes for me during my sabbatical. When I entered the sabbatical, I felt an invitation to enter more into this series. For example, first of all, as the COVID lockdowns came last spring when my sabbatical began, my various sabbatical plans got canceled. And so the invitation was to look for the daily bread that God would send my way anyway, and to respond in gratitude. And this practice I found of slowly began to open my eyes to the many, many ways God was tending me and giving me food to nourish my spirit, which I was in desperate need of. So after a couple of months of this, though, when I was feeling more rested, I suddenly started getting worried about getting the most out of my sabbatical. Maybe I should take a course or produce something meaningful with this time. I wanted to gather more to store it up in my pot for when I came back to work. But thankfully, I had some wise friends. When I talked to them about this, they helped me realize that that was actually coming from a Pharaoh mentality. And my invitation in that season was to keep going deeper into trusting the daily manna God provided and the limited amount I could take in or do in any given day, that was enough. It wasn't easy though, I have to say. It was really clear to me how deeply this Pharaoh way has been and still is embedded and has formed me. Sometimes I wanted food that wasn't on the menu for the day. And the other thing I started to notice by this slowing down and paying attention daily to what God was giving me was that I started to see I had different views of different kinds of work. And I realized that my Pharaoh-like frenzies in my regular work life depended actually on a lot of hidden labor, like in Pharaoh's world, to keep me going. My pace of life, my lifestyle, meant I was drawing on hidden cheap labor to produce my food, my clothing, and more. My deep-seated desire to accumulate things cheaply also meant my life is hard on all of creation. I participate in an iron furnace-like economy. And here's the thing. Not only was I participating in this this way that leads to death and decay, as we see in this passage today, but it also wasn't bringing me peace. Most of the time I felt weighed down or driven by a fear of scarcity of time. And to be honest, I thought about expectations of pastoral work that have been shaped for generations by realities that depend on hidden labor as well, and the expectations to do and be more. The Pharaoh mentality is also in the church. But I know this isn't only my story. As I shared this with friends and others around me, I found out others also feel caught and stuck in this Pharaoh-like economy and mentality that expects more and more production and keeps us locked into exploiting hidden labor and burning up creation. This is a difficult dilemma. I came back from my sabbatical this summer hoping to do things differently, to live more deeply into the manna economy vision that we have been given in scripture. And some things are different. But to be honest, the more I've gotten back into work, I've fallen back into old patterns. It's hard to live as man of people in a feral world. I know I need more formation in this different way of being that God was teaching the people in the wilderness. So I want to ask your help, because you see, I think this man away is something that is actually not possible to live on our own. We need a community to live into it with. And my prayer for us as a church, as we enter into the next season, as we discern what will the next chapter of Granby life be like after we return from COVID, as we discern what staffing or programming we do, or what church might be look like or community like might look like, my prayer is that we will find ways to live more deeply into this vision of the manna economy. That we will find ways together to encourage one another to be freed from the Pharaoh economy, so that there may be enough for all, so that we can stop this iron smelting furnace burning of our creation. But today, I think this vision is big. And the beauty of this story is that it is also a daily story. It's about being formed by God each day, receiving each day what food we need, gathering that in gratitude and trusting that God will form us day by day as we receive this bread from God and live in this manna way. So I'm going to end this time now by putting up the key points from our story today. And rather than expecting you to take all of these points home and digest them, I'm going to invite you to choose one as the daily bread for today. Which one of these do you feel invited to chew on for the day or the week ahead? And once you've gathered one, maybe you want to jot it down or take a picture or something, and keep asking God in the week ahead to feed you and form you in this way, trusting that God will form me as I chew on these words.
Guide me all, thou great Jehovah, pilgrim through this barren